Chris, welcome to San Francisco, man. How was the flight?
It was great, but hey, I checked the bag. We're going to need to watch the carousel and grab it.
Sure, no problem.
Oh, shit, there it is.
The small Samsonite thing?
No, the one next to it.
That steamer trunk?
Yeah.
Were you in fucking steerage? Are you emigrating?
What? Come on, it's standard luggage.
Chris, the fucking conveyor belt looks exhausted. It's wheezing. Jesus, man, that trunk looks like something that would be sealed by an enchantment. You could fit half the cast of Boy Meets World in that thing. What in the hell is in it?
A few essentials.
Go on.
What are the two things I fear most?
Intimacy and earthquakes.
Oh, here it comes. Grab it.
Wait, is this a fucking earthquake, kids?
Guilty.
You're staying for a week.
Yes, an entire week. You might not give a shit about your life, but I do. I've got stuff to live for. I have an amazing credit score, you know.
What do we got in here?
Let's see, a tub of LA Lux hair gel, a shoehorn, a CVS coupon for 50 cents off hair gel, a bullwhip, duster jacket, of course, to go with the whip, liquor for bartering.
Yeah, for food and water, which you haven't packed. At least you've got a flashlight. That's probably one practical thing.
Actually, that's a flashlight, and it was recently used, so you might want to put it down.
This earthquake kit sucks.
Hey, we'll see what you say when shit goes down and I'm the one living large.
How'd you even come up with this kit?
Friend of the podcast. Don't worry, he knows his stuff.
Wait,
give that back. That's personal.
Dear Chris, I hope this letter finds you in good spirits. You Yanks sure do have a lot of pluck, venturing into danger zones near the fault they call San Andreas. Attached is a list of some of the provisions I think most important to your survival, should the big one, as you call it, hit. I want you to be safe on your journey,
but we have a lot of work to do on our new Xbox podcast. Signed, Major Nelson. P.S. I'm liking the working podcast titles of Xbox Car Children and Super Excellent Games published by Microsoft. But I think due to the increasingly friendly nature of our friendship, don't you think X-Bros is more apropos? No need to make decisions now. Just food for thought.
P.P.S. Do not share this information with that partner of yours, Tanner. We only want you for this super secret podcasting project. As it is widely known, you are the core of the Super Dumb Games podcast.
Tanner, I can explain.
You're gonna fly the coop like this? Just turn your back on the empire we built?
It was just an option is all. And you have to admit, it was nice of him to give me the idea for the survival kit. When I asked you what to pack, you just told me to bring running shoes and a spear for urban hunting.
But Major Nelson of all people!
What? Come on, he was in the army, I think.
Is it a dumb game, or am I just dumb? Dumb.
What's dropping?
If you are looking for relevant gaming coverage from experts, you are not getting it on this show.
Right here? Okay. All right, I'm a little bit nervous right now, so I'm just going to count down. I'm going to take my hands away from my eyes, so here we go. 3, 2, 1. I'm so sorry. Ladies and gentlemen, I apologize for puking everywhere, and the sound is absolutely disgusting, I'm sure, but... I should have clued you all in on the fact that the reality is I've never seen Tanner before, and this is the first time I've laid eyes on him, and it created...
Look away!
It created this...
I'm hideous!
After all these years of working together, we decided it would be a good idea to, you know, just make it an entire surprise. No reason to ruin it. Like, it's been such a good working relationship. I don't know, like, what, 15, 16 years of our lives spent dedicated to working together, but never once have I seen such a Quasimodo-like face on a human.
It was a hunting accident, to be honest.
While you were playing Hunter's Trophy 2?
Yeah, I've been a huge fan of hunting all my life and was out on a trail of Fred Bear and he just speared me in the fucking face.
That was the
and
end
I, of I've
it.
Had to deal with it since then, and it's I'm glad that you've had such an awful reaction to it. It really makes me feel wonderful about my hideous
I presume by now, after 32 years on this planet, people have that's the reaction you should come to expect.
Constant puking.
I mean, wouldn't it have been weird if my reaction was, "You're beautiful"? Wouldn't that have made you feel even worse? Because
the shitty thing is, Fred Bear, like, he did pay for the medical bills, but the only extra thing he got me, like, I just have this giant, as you've seen in my entrance to my home now, I have this giant taxidermied bear.
Yeah.
That's wearing a Confederate flag do-rag.
It's quite alarming, to be honest.
It was a bizarre gift. I mean, you disfigured me for life, and I now have a bear with a Confederate flag do-rag. I don't.
It's very strange. Ladies and gentlemen, let me welcome you to episode, what are we on here? Five?
This is five, I think.
Five out of what we plan to be. We have a whole story arc, actually. In
Three was touch and go. We thought it was over after number three.
And we decided we don't want to do a trilogy. We don't want to do a quadrology. We're going to do whatever it is that 554 episodes gets us. That's the key number that we sort of hammered out. When we plotted out, what points do we want to hit? At some point, you know, Tanner gets shot. At another point,
I'll take the bullet for this podcast.
Well, good thing, because sometime around
my face is already fucked.
Yeah,
like it doesn't go much farther from there.
And then I think at another point in that'll be like season 33 or 35 or so, roughly 100 and some episodes in. My niece gets kidnapped. And that's going to be a whole to-do. Stick around, folks. There's a lot of excitement. Car chases.
I think it was season 15 is when we get the precocious young boy. I think our producers were starting to get worried about us hitting on all the demographics. So we're going to, then there'll be like a young child who, with a catchphrase, of course.
Yeah.
Something like, oh, no, you didn't. Or, but it's a little white boy, so it's, like, particularly cute.
Yeah, I think I was opting for, like, don't you start with me. Like, that was the one I was thinking he could maybe do. Because that gives him sort of, like, it reverses the roles. Like, you and I are no longer the adults. It's
and his name's child. His name's Grant or or Roosevelt.
Roosevelt.
Jalen. Or,
well, that's
Thad.
If we want to get a little ethnic, I suppose we could do Jalen.
Or that's all to be determined. It'll be a great name.
Yeah, just stick around because again, 554, if that number is the same one I said earlier, that's the that's what we'll be doing.
It's all clearly plotted out.
Yeah. So welcome.
What's this podcast about?
This is, well, ostensibly, it's about gaming, but in actuality, it's a Life and Times sort of series of vignettes that, you know, where life intertwines with, you know, sort of like a P.T. Anderson movie.
Yeah.
In a way, I suppose. But we're less poignant, I suppose.
It's about diverging paths and viewpoints coming together on some central theme.
Yeah, you remember the movie Crash?
Yes, one of my favorites.
Yeah,
it's so touching.
It's going to be just like Crash. Sweeps the world by storm in the moment, and then, you know, of course, in retrospect, everyone realizes it's fucking shit.
It's going to be like Crash mixed with the Boondock Saints, because the Boondock Saints is like the best.
And only if
it's so raw.
Only if we can get a few of the actors who were in S. Darko. I don't know about you, but Donnie Darko, that was okay, but S. Darko is the movie that is for me.
So if you like any of that, you'll like this show.
Probably not, because that's not what this podcast is about. This is a gaming podcast about some of the dumbest games out there. Let me spell this out for you people. Dumb does not equal bad.
No.
Dumb.
God damn it. The community bin is confused about this.
And we need to clear this shit up, because, well, the community bin is always going to be a cesspool of all the transients who listen to this show, I suppose. But the reality is that a dumb game can still be a fun game.
Yes.
Tanner last week played Hunter's Trophy 2 and found himself alarmingly surprised.
Enjoyed it, folks.
Yeah. This week I ended up playing.
It's shit, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah. There's another game that's I think in the queue I'll eventually play, which was given to me by one of the, as a suggestion by a user, and it looks super dumb, but I think it's going to be really fun. So if you were offended when we said, oh, you know, Train Simulator, Train Simulator is a game I would love to play. Okay.
Love it.
It's going to be fucking dumb though. Not a single moment while I'm playing it am I going to be going, you know, this is actually good. No, it's a fucking dumb game. I'm going to just be enjoying that it's dumb.
Yeah. So what dumb, because I didn't play shit. So, Chris, what dumb games did you play this week?
Oh, man, what games didn't I play this week? That's the question, folks. I played Splatterhouse 2 for the Sega Genesis. It is the sequel to Splatterhouse, which actually I only learned today did not come out for the Genesis. I thought the original came out for the Genesis, but as it turns out, the original was an arcade port as well as a TurboGrafx-16 game.
Yeah, to me, most of my associations are not with Splatterhouse on console. They were all about arcades, and it was always, there were a few machines that to me felt really adult. Splatterhouse, NARC, and Pit Fighter were like the three that if you wanted to, if you were gonna be hard in an arcade, you're gonna be hard around one of those cabinets. That's where, like, you need to pop the collar on your leather jacket. You need to start punching faces.
I think it's important to note that the reason why those games had that wasn't necessarily just the content of the game. It was the artwork on the arcade game itself.
Yeah, did a lot.
Like the arcade game NARC, if I remember correctly, had kind of like, not hyper real, you know, because it wasn't an actual picture of two cops or anything. But I swear that there was like a guy on the right and a guy on the left side holding the gun. Maybe I'm wrong. We're looking this up. But either way,
so there's blood splatter. We're looking at the cabinet
right
now.
Yeah, bullet holes, blood splatter.
And it had that, both NARC and Pit Fighter had that that motion capture kind of graphics where it was digitized human beings.
Right.
And that made it even more gritty and raw.
And I think that's important, though, because if a game like NARC instead had, you know, some gap-tooth kid, just like sort of like going, hey, NARC, you know, on it, that wouldn't be enough. That wouldn't have been enough of a selling point for me. It would have made the game comical, even if the content of the game wasn't comical in the least. I would have never taken it seriously.
It's so 80s that on the cover, like, so these NARCs, they're, when you sign up to be a NARC, you get issued a uniform.
Standard issue. Tell me what's in it.
Tight ass jeans.
Check.
Blue or red. Your choice. Life vest.
Give me one.
With no shoulders on it. So it's a muscle life vest. And then it looks like, oh, motorcycle helmet.
Of course, even though on the cover they're driving a Porsche.
Yeah. Motorcycle helmet, that visor's never coming up. You can't, as a NARC, you can't let anyone see the whites of your eyes.
And then wears Waldo t-shirts.
Yeah,
apparently.
Wears some striped rugby shirts underneath.
So, yeah, so I played Splatterhouse 2, and, you know, again, it's a dumb game. I actually find it to be a very fun, dumb game. And a lot of the fun comes in the fact that, you know, the genre, it is this sort of beat-em-up horror genre, and this time of year especially, horror is a big deal for me. And in this game, I'm not even going to try to pretend like I know the plot. You're a guy trying to rescue a blonde, buxom, bodacious babe.
So you're a good guy.
Well, okay, but I think, because you're wearing like this hockey mask, which if you remember back when this came out, of course, everyone knows that it's kind of hearkening to Jason or one of the movie slashers. You're a good guy, but I don't know if you were bad first and then you're only good because you're going after this gal, or I don't know. I really don't know what it is, and maybe you can tell me.
Yeah, it seems like it was actually a spin on the Jason thing where, like, they wanted they wanted to take the cultural cachet of Jason, mm-hmm. but then they needed a hero because you couldn't, especially in this era, you couldn't play as a villain in a way that you can now. So it's like, all right, well, our good guy will just have a fucking Jason mascot. Right?
This game was great though because you got.
But look at those buns too. If you look up, if you look up footage of Splatterhouse, this guy's got like
he didn't
very
miss,
taut buns.
Yeah, he didn't miss squat day. That's for
no,
sure.
No, and then he's shoeless.
Yeah, well, because you know he wandered into. He didn't ask for this. Okay, this was thrust upon him when his love interest Jennifer was suddenly kidnapped. His day was going swimmingly without any of the. He was lounging around just
in his Carhartt
yeah,
overalls,
exactly.
Fresh off you know the docks.
Yeah, and then next thing you know, he gets the call. Hey, Jennifer can be saved, or can she's alive, or whatever it says at the beginning. And next thing you know, he's got to get in his jalopy and head over to a haunted house where he then proceeds to smash the faces in of all these ghouls and things that explode and ooze out slime and things of that nature.
Then he rescues his girlfriend. They go back home, and it's like nothing ever happened.
Yeah, she was indifferent to the whole thing, honestly. Pretty much sums up most relationships. So he goes into this world where he's fighting all these things, whatever. This is where the game becomes really satisfying. It's not in the story or in the graphics. It's in the fact that you get to pick up weaponry, and when you do, it has this very satisfying... most games, like when you go to hit a beast, it can feel clunky. It can feel like you're not ready to, like when you go to hit them, it's that you're gonna miss because they only coded it so that a certain part of the beam or whatever you're holding will hit the person. So like instead the beast will like hit your knuckles as you're on the way down, and then when that happens, you take damage. In this game, you can be like 3 feet away and swing and hit these motherfuckers into a wall. It feels like you're actually tapping the sweet spot of a bat. Like you're connecting perfectly. I don't know.
How about the sound effects? What kind of sound effects do we got?
It's pretty shitty sound effects.
Oh.
Well, I mean, it's not shitty. It's just, it's not really that great of sound effects.
Yeah.
It would be much more satisfying. And you'll see in the playthrough video when we comment on that, which should be uploaded whenever, I don't even know.
Who knows?
I recorded those at 60 frames per second. It's the highest quality Splatterhouse 2 game footage you will ever find. So, but yeah, I mean, in terms of the rest of the game, look, people, it's fucking hard, all right? So don't judge me when you see the playthrough. I play the first level, beat the first boss, I get to the second level, die a million times over, I entered a cheat code, go to the very final level, which is you on an elevator with your buxom blonde babe, Jennifer, at your side.
It's an escort mission?
Technically, like, I don't know what precipitates you being on this elevator, but you're suddenly
since
on
you
this...
cheated.
Yeah, that's right. So you're suddenly on this elevator, but shit's falling down, and I was trying to figure out if there was some kind of pattern to how it falls, and I couldn't crack the code if there is one. So I kept getting hit in the head by pieces of falling debris. Then you got these ghouls that spawn, and you got to kick the crap out of them. And I think after that, if I would have made it farther, but I don't plan on ever playing the game again, probably. I think you actually get into like a jet ski chase of some kind.
Yeah, that. Yep.
It's just par for the course for Splatterhouse 2, people.
Anybody with those buns needs to get on a jet ski. That's what I say.
Just to flex them a little bit.
So I think that's about all the time we have.
Yeah, I'll tease next week another game that I played. You may have seen the tweet, ladies and gentlemen. It was a momentous occasion for all, or for, what do we call it? For Super Dumb Games. I did beat a game, and it's been a long time since I've beaten a game. So the excitement is there. You'll feel it while I'm playing.
And it's a Super Dumb Games first. Neither of us have beaten anything until now.
And why would I even, you'll be wondering the whole time that I play, all 25 minutes of my playtime, why did I stick with it?
Sounds like a really challenging game.
It was. Well, you know what? We'll talk more about it in next week's podcast. But stick around. We've got really, really bad segments coming up.
So welcome back to the Super Dumb Games podcast. This is our new segment.
Fuck that shit! This is Super Dumb Games, motherfucker! What's dropping?
hold on. Ladies and gentlemen, I did not realize this, but he actually has a stack of cinder blocks that he punches and then throws the debris up. That's the sound you're hearing.
That's not Foley, motherfuckers.
Holy shit.
And you know what? It's worth it this week because 10, 8, 13. I think that was last week. Some shit dropped. Some game shit. PC Mac. Sony Online Entertainment. This was EverQuest. Call of the Forsaken.
Holy shit.
Do you know, Chris, what number of expansion this is for EverQuest?
Okay, so EverQuest had EQ, then... Well, so this is just on the base game.
This is fucking EverQuest 1.
Okay, so it had that.
What number expansion is this?
And it had, like, what, Ruins of Kunark?
That's 1.
It had some kind of, like, Shadow Isles? I don't know, I might be confusing.
Shadow of Lucklin or something, okay, yeah. I think. Yeah, that's one of them. It's 2.
I'm gonna say that there's been 7 expansions since...
No! 20!
20? What have they expanded on with these 20?
The Call of the Forsaken is the 20th expansion of EverQuest. EverQuest has been around for 15 years. Holy they are shit. Still putting out expansions for this thing.
That is nuts. So what are they expanding upon? I mean, so, okay, if you were to pop in EverQuest right now and you had no expansions, what are you playing anymore? Is it
so...
Go ahead.
I guess. Here's what I'm trying to... I've been trying to figure this out. So, one of the things that this game added was mercenary alternate advancements. So, apparently you can... Apparently the game has mercenaries now. So, you're not just playing with other players. I think you can party up with NPCs that you then level up and get gear for. Which sounds... kind of fucking cool.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like when you're playing Skyrim or any of those other games and you get your partner in crime, yeah. Lydia or whoever it is, and you level them up with you.
Yeah, so this, apparently this expansion, you'll encounter the powerful dragon lady Ledinaria across the once peaceful plains of West Karana, which used to be
a
zone.
Yeah.
I guess they're redoing that. Cataclysmic events in the region have torn an invisible seam to expose the Ethnarine and bind countless realities. It looks like, in addition to the mercenary shit, there's heroic adventures, which they're borrowing for World of Warcraft, you know, like extra XP kind of shit. Mm. But what I love the most is, if you want this motherfucker, you've got to pay $39.99, which seems to me exorbitant.
Yeah, but does that give you all the other expansions too? Is there...
I don't think so. Listen, the news department at Super Dumb Games can only do so much, people.
We're working with a skeleton crew with scant at best knowledge of how the news works.
So you pay $39.99. Here's what you're getting, folks. 32 slot bag. Live it up. Gargoyle statue, which...
Of course.
Parentheses, house and yard item. So apparently you have houses in EverQuest now. You get a pet, a familiar. You get a fucking painting. And this ain't no dime store painting. This is Nathox Thax for your fucking wall. And then you know what? You're getting a second painting. Christinos Thax. And then you're getting a Mark of Nariak. But then... if you're Mr. Moneybags, if you're Maximilian Deep Pocketeer, you're going Collector's Edition, you're laying down $90. That's 10 less than 100.
Wouldn't it be kind of funny if the second painting was like a Georgia O'Keeffe? And you just get to hang in there.
Or like one of those paintings in the 80s. I don't know the artist, but it was like line drawn. And it was like a chick with short hair and like a Lamborghini and pastels.
Yes, I know.
I remember there was some dude's house near my neighborhood had one of those. It's not a fucking painting. It's a poster hanging above like his white vinyl couch. Okay, so you pay $90 here. Here's what you're getting on atop a fucking satchel and a couple paintings.
Okay, give it to me.
Another satchel!
Oh, shit!
A honeycomb satchel. You're getting a house. Okay. So you get a hive of the Bixie honeycomb house.
This is like Second Life or something. Yeah.
And then you get a mount, an Ethnarine worm, and you get a Bixie mercenary.
Let's just say this. This game is nothing like the game I knew 15 years ago.
No, nothing like it.
So my question to you, because you played the first EQ way more than I did, would you even be willing to go back?
Yes. I've been thinking about it's that game, like everyone has that game.
Sure.
That doesn't go away, that has this, it's a fetishistic kind of relationship. Like it was like this special experience that maybe introduced you to something. And for me, EverQuest introduced me to massively multiplayer. So I'm every year I'm thinking about going back.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, it was Mutant League Football.
Okay. Top Sizzlers. These are your top stories for this week. Huge breaking news out of the UK, folks.
I'm sorry. There's no way this is huge.
Huge.
Okay, go for it. Let me hear it.
I mean, James Pond Kickstarter comes to an early end.
Wait, he failed? Is that what you're telling?
Yeah. 336 backers.
Oh.
16,000 pounds later.
Oh.
Out of 100,000 pounds.
Maybe had they converted the currency to, you know, pesos, then he would have met his goal.
These motherfuckers, they called it 13 days early. They didn't want to slump through the finish line. They thought James Pond.
Oh.
Do you know?
No, I don't know. I don't know any of this shit. I just know that a guy got, I like that somebody failed. There's a bit of shade in front of
here. So the story behind, listen, I don't know anything. James Pond was a franchise back in the Genesis days. I think there was an initial game and then two sequels. The idea was it's like a fucking tadpole or something that was James Bond. The dumbest of games.
Is it like an Earthworm Jim kind of? Okay.
So they were trying, they're British, you know?
Gotta give them a little break.
There's some wonderful British comedians. There's some fucking terrible British comedians. Right. And these were in the vein of a kind of Yahoo Serious, right. Yakov Smirnoff kind of humor, where it was funny enough that a tadpole was in a tuxedo.
Right.
Like that. That gets us halfway. I'm just spitballing here, but that gets us halfway. And because people were dumb, they bought it. Fueled two sequels. These dudes, you know, years and years later are like, man, you know, people are giving Double Fine $5 million to come up with a new adventure game in the vein of Monkey Island. Guess what, James Bond? You're not Monkey Island.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
that's crazy to me that they would even think that a game that silly with such a silly pro. Because the games that are making a comeback now are games that are very notable, I think. Like, for instance, what was the one that we got in on the Kickstarter?
I got in Shadowrun.
Yeah, Shadowrun was one of them.
There was one that I funded was for, like, the people who did the kind of Baldur's Gate series.
Yeah. And there's a reason why we would put money behind that. And it's because even back then, those were games that
weren't novelties.
Yeah, they were good games. Yeah. So I'll put money behind that shit. James Pond.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Fuck. Apparently 336 people cared. Well,
do you happen to know what the prize levels were? Like, or, you know, the backing levels?
Yeah. I mean,
What would I have gotten if I would have put down like $100 for James
Pond? Okay, so $100 James Pond. What you're getting is upfront game cheat codes. A level overview map. Extra t-shirt. And you know what? Okay. This sells me on it. Ringtones.
Oh, God.
Because this is 2001.
Right.
And I've got my Nokia flip phone. All right. So next story. Next top sizzler. Mad Cats to sell micro console in the vein of an Ouya, if you've heard of that. Mad Cats is going to sell a micro console for $250
$50 in December.
What's Mad Catz and what's Ouya? Okay. I need everything in this story explained to me.
This sounds like a computer generated headline. So Mad Catz with a Z. When you go to Best Buy and you're like, oh, I got to get a new controller. Right. And you've got to shuffle through 500 shit controllers.
Right.
That weigh as much as a piece of paper.
Right.
That's Mad Catz. They put out all the shitty peripherals for video games. And Ouya is the dumbest of consoles. It was like this little box that got funded on Kickstarter that is basically a phone. But a console. So you play mobile games on your TV. Okay. There's no market for it! No one cares! I'll play the phone games on my iPad or phone. Yeah. I don't need to see it on my TV. Anyway, that thing's like $100 or whatever, which is steep.
Yeah.
And everyone hates it.
And now they want to charge $250.
$250. Or a way to play mobile games on your television.
I'll tell you what, they're only going to get one purchase out of me. I'm not going to buy two like I usually do with my consoles. I usually buy two because I like to show off my wealth. These people will only get one.
They need a backup.
Yeah.
So this stupid piece of shit is called the Mojo. M-O-J-O. M dot. So, there's some fucking acronym here. Like this is a... an image comic in the 90s. Like this, I can see this is a character that has a lot of straps.
Yeah, mechanical, overweight Jewish optician.
With a giant cod piece and an AK-47 and like laser eyes. So apparently their angle is, this isn't your daddy's mobile console. This thing's got like an NVIDIA Tegra 4 240S 18. Point
the
gigawatts,
fuck are these?
2 gigabytes RAM. We don't care! Mad Catz, go away! Last story. Getting a little serious here, folks. Updated. Forced student labor used to build PS4s at Foxconn in China. Are you kidding me?
Oh my god.
So this is from MCV. Written by one Ben Pardit, who looks like a serious motherfucker with glasses on. He's rocking the bald with like bold glasses look.
Oh, nice.
So Ben writes, it has been alleged that controversial Chinese manufacturer Foxconn, so it are like the worst of the worst.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I know Foxconn. Their working conditions are abysmal.
Has been using forced labor as part of its PS4 manufacturing operation. Games in Asia cites reports emerging in China claiming that thousands of students from an IT engineering program at the Jin Institute of Technology, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, are being forced to work at Foxconn's Yantai plant assembling the Sony PlayStation 4. So apparently it's being advertised as an internship for these students. And then they like get kicked in a door gets slammed. And they're like,
welcome.
They're laboring over hardware.
So how much does this take off the cost of a PS4? All I care about is what I, the white consumer in middle America, gets.
So students have been told if they refuse to participate, they lose 6 course credits. So they're like being blackmailed.
Jesus.
Which effectively means they will not be able to graduate.
Oh my god. Eventually they're going to start tapping into like their meal plan. Like you will not get your meal plan paid for.
It's insane. I don't even know how this is how this even happens.
How this company is still in existence. This is 2013, right? So this Foxconn shit has been happening for I don't know. I've been hearing about it for I don't know, at least 6 years. Every Christmas there's some story about shit that's getting pumped out electronics-wise. And there's these people forcing the labor. I think this is the first time I've heard this racket being used where it's, let's bring in some interns.
They're probably thinking like, oh, we're doing a good program now. This is an internship. Yeah, yeah. And they don't understand. They're like so evil that they don't even understand how to be decent.
You should just want to work. You should be paying us to work.
Yeah.
Which is what you are doing with your life.
So fuck Foxconn. Next segment. These are the things. This is the fan favorite. This is This is what the community been clamoring for. This is hot off the wire. So these are your top stories as determined by your crack SDG news department coming off the PR newswire. First one, this headline, if you're anything like me, this headline just made me laugh just because it's, this is the shit that people are writing, that public relations people are writing and submitting to the newswire as if this should come off a telegraph on Obama's desk. So hot news here, people. Speed Rush by Game Annex off to a good start on Kickstarter.
Oh, good. Good news. Finally, a good news story to hear. Off to a good start, you say?
Not a great one.
Yeah, no, that's we don't want to build up expectations here, people. The start, it started off lukewarm. We've moved on to, it's a good start.
We're off up to a good start, unlike James Pond.
Yeah. James Pond, shit start, out of the gate.
Actually, James Pond probably released one of these press releases. James Pond off to a pretty good start.
Not doing so shabby.
We're fairly confident. And then 2 weeks later, James Pond fucked.
Next week's headline is going to be, it's going to say like, had an okay week, hoping for a better one.
Thanks for writing the press release. So Speed Rush, y'all, get on it. This is the ambitious superbike racing game from the makers of Crazy Monster Truck, which we all know and love.
Sure, yeah, I have 5 copies of it.
Oh, wait, that's Crazy Monster Truck - Escape.
Escape. That adds a whole new layer to what that game could be about, though, because are you escaping from jail in a monster truck? Anyway.
You're escaping from the horror of your life as a monster truck driver. There is no rocking backstage for like all you do backstage as a monster truck driver is like slam a Red Bull and throw your overalls in the laundry. Like
and then just talk about how great the days were when Grave Digger was around. Or is he still around? I don't even
And
know.
Listen, if that's not enough to wet your whistle for Speed Rush, this developer also created fan favorite Maths Mania.
Is that math?
Yes, plural. So it's another UK. It's right in the vein of James Pond. So Speed Rush, y'all, get on it. You know, if you want more information, you can contact Shashin Shah at Game Annex.
that's made up, right?
Incorporated at +1 408 940 6659. Or if you've got phone anxiety and you don't want to talk to Shashin voice, you can contact him or her at pr@gameannex.com. And by the way, Game Annex is spelled GameAnax. So the whole time I've been wanting to say like Game Anus.
That's the most
Game Anix.
I wonder what that is supposed to mean. An axe.
I can't figure it out.
Game and
it's
game
terrible.
And, game and axe. Game and Axe. Game and Axe. Maybe it's like,
Game. Oh, yeah.
Maybe it's called Game and Axe.
We shouldn't have to think this hard, this ad is wizards. So the next story. This one's
another
got,
one?
This one's got 4 likes.
Oh, shit.
This one's quick. Intellivision Productions and At Games Digital Media partner to bring new products to market. So what basically this boils down to, if you've seen the new Atari they released, it's like,
no.
A thin plastic thing. They sell it at like little toy stores in the mall or kiosks.
Well, that's your problem right there. I don't go to the mall.
Yeah. So basically Atari released an Atari that you just, it's a plug and play almost with your television.
Okay.
Apparently now Intellivision is getting one of those.
I love Intellivision.
But it's one of the weirder consoles.
Oh yeah.
Like Atari has almost this aura around it because it was the console of Pac-Man and all of this, and it has the classic joystick. People are familiar with it. In television, you played it with a remote.
You had didn't it have like a little spinny dial on it?
Some reason.
I don't,
like that.
I did play a really intuitive racing game. Intuitive in the sense that using that remote made perfect sense. I don't remember many other games that I played for television, but
it was a fairly big console, mm-hmm. but it's not an Atari, and that remote, I'm fucking fascinated that they're putting this thing out again. You imagine like some grandma buying this for their kid because she doesn't know anything. She's right. just like, oh, this is a game. And then the kid's like, the fuck is this shit? First of all, I don't know what a remote is.
Why aren't you dead? First off.
Why don't you croak?
How much longer we got? That's the game we're playing.
Where's
right now.
My trust fund? Anyway, that's your news, folks.
Did you ever get help by RLA? She's more ingenious, she's inferior. The dense medium's mine, the light one is hers. She's bending rays to the interior. Did you ever have help with a problem?
All right, so last week you might recall that our final segment ended up on the cutting room floor. Despite sounding tasteless, Tanner and I do have very sophisticated, refined tastes, and we recognize that telling too many jokes about balls and cock and balls and cock balls and taint and cock balls, taint, and butthole. You see, I'm working my way front to back, anatomically speaking.
Nips!
We sort of realized that segment wasn't a good fit, and the segment that ended up going in its place that Tanner did was a hit globally. I know that in Syria they are now having talks about the peace process because of what Tanner talked about in his past life gaming with a good friend of his.
It feels really validating.
Yeah, I mean, Jimmy Carter tried. Ronald Reagan fucked it all up again. George H.W. Bush never tried. President Bill Clinton was a good guy. I'm just going off presidents right now. Okay.
Let's talk about Franklin Pierce, though. He tried.
He wasn't very good. Okay, so this last segment is a segment we like to call just spitballing. And that's basically what I'm doing right now with this introduction, ladies and gentlemen. I'm just spitballing an intro for you. This is a game that we like to play where we take the name of a game, which is randomly generated, and from there, we create the game before your very eyes. You get an inside glimpse at what it's like to see two amazing game designers put together a game based on name alone. Some of the key factors that we look at are, what will the genre of the game be, perhaps? Or we might discuss different plot points in the game. We'll discuss characters that may emerge or what their fates may be. We'll also talk about the game mechanics themselves. How is the game played? Is it a platformer? Is it a first-person shooter? Well, that's genre. I mean, more like what kind of things happen within the game that will be the wow factor for players. So, having said that, I think that what we need to do is, let's see, the order of operations here should probably be we pick the name of the game, and then we will set a timer for 10 minutes. And after 10 minutes, ladies and gentlemen, get the Kickstarter page ready because this game is going to be made.
All right, so I'm going to start clicking, Chris. Okay. I'm randomly generating video game names. You tell me when to stop.
And stop.
All right, so I'm going to put 10 minutes on the clock.
All right.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're just spitballing here. Our game is called Bloody Surgery Rescue.
Okay, so Bloody Surgery Rescue. We're talking about a game, clearly, that, setting-wise, it could take place in a hospital. But I think that what would make this more endearing is if, instead of a hospital, let's make this take place at, like, a preschool. I think that'll throw audiences off a little bit. They won't quite know what to expect when you're, like, the opening shot. Okay, hear me out. I'm just spitballing here. Opening shot, kids are playing in a preschool. A book's being read. A few kids are playing on that little sheet of paper it was like an 8x8 sheet of paper that looked like a town, and you'd put cars on it and you'd drive through town.
Yeah, that thing.
So these kids are just, they're hanging out there. All of a sudden, one of the kids has something happen to them. Now, what I need you to do, is just spitball what happens to that kid.
Okay, so this kid needs to have a horrific bloody accident.
Right. Or a gunman could come in. It could be a school shooting sim.
Yeah, that could be. Yeah, that I'm sure that would be a big seller. I'm not going to go there, though. I remember when I was a kid, the monkey bars were perhaps the most devastating of all apparati.
Okay.
And I'm thinking there's a kid working it on those monkey bars. This kid, by the way, just happens to be a trained gymnast.
He's from Russia. Let's give him a name. Let's call him Oliver Tits Off. I wrote it down.
I can verify he did write that down. So Oliver is from Russia. Maybe he got adopted or something. He's one of those like underground babies, you know, right, that Romanian underground.
Yeah, those babies are disgusting.
In Dark Days, that documentary, like one of those disgusting babies got saved from the dark depths of the subway system, living, you know, eating refuse and, you know, sweeping chimneys. Oliver gets saved, shipped over to live with like a well-to-do Silver Spoons-like family. And he's just working those fucking monkey bars.
Okay.
But the sun glints in his eye. He tries to go for a vault and just beefs it.
And this is a cutscene. I see this as a cutscene.
Yeah, this is where we start.
Okay. And so once he beefs it, the question is, do we then retreat into Oliver's subconscious, or are we going to keep the game exterior to that? Will the game?
Yeah, here's the twist. So we're kind of we're influenced by the hit Martin Short, Dennis Quaid comedy Inner Space. And what happens is right after he beefs it on the monkey bars, the camera travels in like through his nostril. And we are in his body.
Nice.
And that's where the rescuing is taking place.
Now this is also critical. Who is doing the rescuing? Now, is it going to be, dust mites that are on a mission to help humanity and we're just unaware of it and they make their way up the nose? Is this something where surgeons rush to the scene and there's a doctor who says, you know, excuse me, lunch lady, I can save this child, but you have to let me do entirely experimental surgery. I have to go in through an orifice, not the nose. I have to go in through an orifice.
It can't be the nose. It has to be any orifice. Right. Oh, it can't be the ears. I just remembered.
Right. Yep. And you know, I know what you're thinking, people. Get your mind out of the gutter. We're not going to do anything below the belt. What's going to end up happening is Oliver is actually going to have his butthole is actually on his abdomen from a surgery that he had to have back in the day. He had an ileostomy, so they have to go in through his ileostomy. And
God, Oliver's life is pretty fucking depressing. By the way, so okay. I'm trying to stay on page here.
Yeah. Okay.
So the cutscene, kid, Oliver, shipped over, rescued from refuse, beefs it. He's an amazing gymnast, but he still beefs it.
Siren.
He then gets shipped over to the hospital. There's a doctor there who has some secret technology to shrink himself interspace style. Yeah. By the way, that doctor's Richard Grieco.
Okay.
And this is an FMV game. and there's at least 30 minutes of Metal Gear Solid style cutscene, FMV style, of Richard Grieco explaining the orifice in which he needs to enter. Like, he keeps going on because he understands this is sensitive.
Yeah, and you know, the parents who are in the room, they don't speak this lingo of his. So Richard Grieco he's breaking it down. He's making drawings of it. He even brings out like some paper mache at some point, and he's really trying to show them, even though he probably could just gesture to the body of poor Oliver Titsoff and show where he's going to go in. But he has to do this via PowerPoint, some projector slides, things like that. But that's good for us because we want this to be at least a 40 hours of gameplay game.
Yeah, so we really need to sink it in early.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's even a whole portion where, you know, he's about to make the presentation. He's like, oh, God, my PowerPoints aren't all together. So then we cut away and the very first gameplay you have. You're not doing the gymnastics or any of that stuff. You watch all that stuff. The very first thing you do, because this game's hardcore, is you're in PowerPoint. Like, yeah. It looks exactly like PowerPoint, and you're having to make a slide about this surgery.
And the best part about this, though, is that this is where we start introducing the different story branches, a la Mass Effect and stuff like that. Depending on how well you're able to explain the bloody surgery rescue you have to do to Oliver, that will dictate Oliver's fate. So if you don't know how to use PowerPoint, you're not going to be able to convey accurately what it is you're going to do. And by proxy, that means you're probably a really horrible doctor. So that means that you're
because PowerPoint skills and doctors, I mean, there's a clear correlation
exactly.
there between medical. Yeah.
You know exactly what I'm talking about. This is a known in the business field.
And the secret really is to scoring well in that mode, because we all know the best thing about PowerPoint presentations are killer transitions. So I want to see text floating in and out, getting big,
and
small.
It has to have sound effects accompanying it. So if the text comes in from the left side of the screen, it better go like whoosh. As it hits the screen.
And so we're about 15 hours into the game at this point, because that PowerPoint, like, you're sinking all of your nights into this thing.
And as you're doing it, just so that the player is clued in, because I'm sure at some point you're going to wonder, well, what's Oliver Titsoff's fate right now? We will have in the background, his heart rate will be beeping in the background. And I think that'll be a really poignant thing to have, because as you're doing this PowerPoint, like, sometimes his heart rate might go up a little bit, and you're like, I got to get this fucking PowerPoint done. I've got to make this better. Yeah. It'll be the indicator to the player to let them know, are you losing Oliver, or is this, you know, are you going to be able to actually perform the surgery?
But the thing is, like, we don't want people to get bored during that point. So
well, I don't really know why they would, but okay.
Well, I know. Okay. But we're going to take it like up another notch just to make it even that whole PowerPoint thing amazing, is that when Oliver's heart's beating, his heart's actually beating to Rapper's Delight by the Sugar Hill Gang. So it's like beep, 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 beep. And it's just like, it's just laying down this awesome beat while you're doing the PowerPoint. 15 hours in, you're like, yeah, 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 PowerPoint, yeah, yeah. So then you get the PowerPoint slide done, you show it to the family, and
they're not impressed. They're, in fact, what they reveal to you is they've always wanted Oliver out of their lives. This is their out.
The secret subplot. 15 hours in, you know, this is when the real deal starts.
Right.
To happen.
So you get to talk to the parents, and this can be, you know, one of those like where you choose dialogue options, and depending on how persuasive you are, or if you decide that you're going to use aggressive tactics, you can try your best to get the mom and dad to alter their opinion. But some players, they're going to find out that the mom and dad just want Oliver totally gone.
Yeah, they're like, pull the plug, Doc.
Yeah.
Like, but it's just, he just beefed on the gym.
Yeah, no, Doc.
They're like, pull the plug.
Last thing I ever wanted was this kid in my life.
That's when Richard Grieco rips off the lab coat, and just his chest is just displayed. And it's like bear mode. Like, he's just, like, he saves the kid. Crashes out the window, gets in a car, and this is where the rescue happens.
Right.
Is that he, like, now he's being chased by the parents who desperately want that kid dead and out of their lives.
And in order to do it, they have to kill Richard Grieco.
Yeah. And his car, of course, is a Rockin' Firebird. T-top.
Yeah, T-top.
Fucking T-top. Right when he gets in, there's another mini game, which is just, Before he even peels away, he's got to get the stereo right.
Right.
Like, so there's probably a half hour of gameplay just in that moment of, what am I cruising to?
Yeah, because if you guys remember, when you're turning the dial on those old stereos, like you had to hit the sweet spot.
Yeah.
And if you don't hit the sweet spot, I mean, which is a metaphor for the game, because eventually you do perform surgery on this kid, I hope.
Yeah.
That'll probably happen like around hour 39 and a half of the game.
Yeah, we want to save that till the end.
Yeah,
tease it early.
Right. And then so he's involved in this whole chase thing between the parents and him.
After he gets the radio station.
After he gets the radio station taken care of.
And there's an optional mini game where you can call up the radio station to get Van Halen tickets, but like, you don't have to do that.
If you do that, though, it opens up another tree at the end where if you save the boy's life, you get to take him to a Van Halen concert, and the Easter egg is after the credits of the game. It's you and him, and you're both watching Jump live.
Yeah.
Has that been 10 minutes? Because I swear to God.
It had. It was 11. So, okay. If you take this, I mean, clearly this is a hit. We know what we've got here. You know what we've got here. We're not going to do the legwork. We're idea guys.
That's right.
So you can run with it. But if you run with it, we want to be first build. We want to be involved in nearly all meetings. We want to be able to make last changes.
Yeah, we get director's cut on this thing. Yeah. So it actually might not even turn out to have a kid named Oliver Titsoff in it at all. Or star Richard Grieco.
He might be too expensive.
Yeah, we'll have to see what our budget is. It'll be outlandish, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Well, that is the conclusion to another thrilling podcast. And I feel like I say this every time, but it cannot be said enough. This is the greatest podcast I think I've ever listened to. And I'm certain you're thinking the same thing right now. You're wondering, 55 and a half minutes have gone by. My whole life is complete. And now I have to go on with the rest of my day. How do I face it? The answer is you shouldn't really face the rest of your day. I would probably kill myself if I were you. There's no point to living.
Yeah.
Subscribe.
Yeah. You know, do the thing. Superdumbgames.com. You know?
There's a Twitch account, right?
Yeah. There's Twitters. You can tweet us. There's email stuff.
All right. Well, hey, just so you know, your face isn't as hideous as I thought it was initially. Let me get one more good look at it. God damn. I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to puke again. I'm so sorry. We'll see you guys next week.
Dumb games.